everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, April 25th, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake, and here with me today is Mark Ritchie, Managing Partner and Chief Investment Officer of RTM Capital Investors. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, Maggie. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, and it's you know, a great time. I'm really interested to get your thoughts because we saw some pretty interesting market action today, including we got to start with the news that Elon Musk is successfully buying Twitter after all the back and forth around that $54.20 a share, $44 billion deal. He's going to be taking the company private. Twitter has been blowing up with the news that he's buying Twitter, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of opinions about that, but it almost sort of overshadowed the fact that we saw a broad rebound in equity markets after that really ugly close on Friday. We opened lower, but they came back and they've actually been sort of rallying into the close, which is interesting. The Dow up about 0.5%, no, actually 0.75%, S&P 500, 0.5%, NASDAQ, the best performer, up 1.26%. We saw the yields on the 10-year treasury back away from 3%, hovering around 2.82, and the VIX edged down, but interestingly, that's sort of sticking at an elevated level around 27. So when you put it all together, I mean, what did you make of this trading session, especially that equity turnaround?
Right. Today was kind of interesting, and in some ways is just sort of a microcosm, I think, really of the year and kind of the type of market we're in. This is sort of classic bear market type action, in my view, where we don't have a strong bid under the market, which was really evident at the end of last week, where the market got clobbered pretty good Thursday and Friday. And even on Friday, we didn't even have much volume. And it was just that sort of that classic 45 degree upper left to lower right in your screen, where it just marched lower all day. Today we opened soft, which I would have expected. That's pretty normal after a bad Friday close. We found our footing. I'll be interested to see where the volume run rate came, but we're kind of in no man's land here. So we were short-term oversold. Doesn't surprise me, though, that volatility didn't come off very much, because I think there are a lot of people who probably aren't willing to part with their protection just yet based upon, say, the price action over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's why I was, and in fact, it was actually, even when the market was rallying back, the VIX was up for a long time. It finally turned negative at the end of the day. But I saw that and I was like, oh, that doesn't look like there's very much conviction in this equity bounce. So, you know, what are you looking at when you look sort of underneath the hood? Does it seem like this has the potential to be a floor, or does it seem like it's just really that bear market bounce and it's very fragile? How is it feeling to you?
The latter. So, yeah, I was reviewing my notes from when we last talked in January. Keep in mind, that was prior to an official war kicking off. And I was saying, we're in a cyclical bear market per our work. The bad news, I guess, is nothing has changed and potentially under the surface has only gotten worse. The good news would be that I think sentiment has gotten a little bit worse or a little bit more negative. The problem with some of these sentiment surveys and those types of things is they're contrarian, but they're not always the best timing mechanisms. So things can stay overbought for a long period of time. They can stay oversold. And so there are people, a lot of sort of the newsletter writers like AAII, I think a week and a half ago came out with the lowest number of bulls in the survey in 30 years. Well, that is a contrarian good indicator, but everything else doesn't look very good. So where would you like me to start? And we can kind of go.
Yeah, that you bring up a really good point, because, you know, I was speaking to Jared Dillian on Friday, and, you know, I like everybody's kind of, you know, spidey sense, I think is what he called it. We were laughing, but it feels like things aren't good and there's like more damage to come, or things might be kind of breaking underneath the surface somewhere. You just don't know where it is yet. There's a lot of fear of that, but, you know, on a really short-term basis, and maybe this is where the time horizon for this stuff we have to introduce that into the conversation. On a short-term basis, he felt like the bond move was exhausted, you know, because everybody said rates are going up. Everybody says mortgage rates are going up. And it just felt like when everyone's in consensus, it just feels overdone. So super short term, you know, he was looking at bonds, but then there's this sort of, you know, medium to longer term, especially that medium term just looks like a hot mess. So talk to me a little bit about time frame and what you're looking at. And are you concentrating on equities, or is this really all about bonds? Are bonds driving bond yields driving everything here?
Well, so a lot of questions there, and they're all really relevant. And listen, a number of people have made this point, I think on Real Vision and, you know, sort of throughout the Twitter sphere, that type of thing. When the market is grappling with too many things at one time, it's generally a headwind, meaning, you know, the more managers have to discount too many possible issues, the more they are to lighten up and risk. I will say this, even in the short run, I'm surprised the equities have traded as well as they have. And I say that based on a few things. One, the action under the hood, sort of intermediate term in terms of the stocks themselves, has been as bad as I've seen it since 08, specifically in tech. I know you and I talked about this. We've talked about this the last couple times where I was saying, even going all the way back to last summer, I was saying, you know, the frothiest parts of the market have topped. Well, that was like when ARK was off 30%. Now it's off 65, 70%. You're seeing some of the, you know, some of these former leaders have just gotten absolutely crushed. This is classic secular bear market type action in some of these stocks under the hood. Now, whether that means the overall index turns into a secular bear market, that's almost irrelevant to me, because I'm saying there's enough headwinds where you should have raised cash a while ago, at least per my work. Because really the only areas that have been holding up were these sort of inflationary impulse areas, oil and commodity related. Those took a hit today. And then of course we saw that rotation trade reversed the other way, which is tech has been beaten up the most. It led today. That feels more like an oversold bounce to me. The other point I would make though is we've had now multiple rally attempts. And what I mean by that is sort of based on the old William O'Neill follow through days. I can run. There's a simple rule that says when the market rallies, I'm talking about the general market, more than 1%, 4 days off the low on an increase in volume, that has a decent historical predictive ability, usually about 50-50. Most people might say, well, 50-50, that's not that great. However, the ones that work are generally good for multiples of that risk on the upside. We've seen multiple attempts now fail. Most of those failures happen during cyclical and secular bear markets. You know, the percentage of stocks that are trading above their long-term moving averages has continued to stay very low. Right now, I just ran this, 20% of NASDAQ stocks are above their 200-day moving average. Well, it should be no coincidence then. Where did the NASDAQ fail? Right at the 200 a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And all the major indices failed to hold their 200-day moving average, rolled over, and now the weaker ones, the Russell and the NASDAQ, both their 200 days have now started to roll over and are turning down. That's classic cyclical bear market type action. The FANG is another good area. We've lost half of the FANG in terms of, you look at the old growth at a reasonable price, those institutional favorites where some people even said things like, these stocks can't go down. Well, we've got Netflix last week as just a classic example. Oh.
That's just ugly. That chart is terrible this month.
Well, but if you look at what happened there, this is I tweeted about this in January and February when Facebook and Netflix broke. And I said, this is the largest price and volume decline since the beginning of the move. What I mean by that is over the last 24 months, we haven't seen this aggressive of selling. That is a huge change in character. That is like your check engine and oil light going off at the same time saying something is wrong.
Yeah.
And how many people did you hear come out, Maggie, saying, oh, these stocks are a great bargain down here?
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Well, and that is a really, really important question. I want to ask one, though, from Bo. You know, I like to get as many questions in as I can. So everyone listening, feel free to drop them and we'll try to get as many as possible. But Bo is asking, are we running out from the RV site? Are we running out of rotations yet? I mean, this is part. I think it's a great question because people were kind of chasing that momentum out of big tech into energy. But, you know, you saw a day like Friday, and this has been happening to your point where everything's getting killed, you know. So what do you think about that?
Well, there's an old saying that, you know, in bear markets, they eventually get to everything.
Yeah.
And it's a really good question because one of the things I've tweeted about this a little bit, but we've been talking about it in our shop that, you know, if the rotation trade just turns into a liquidation trade, we could go a lot lower quickly. And and I've made this point. I'll make this point until I'm dead and gone and somebody else can make it. You know, that when markets lose lift, that they're most dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so that's why somebody like me right now, I'm not saying we're going to go 10% lower in 3 days or those type of, you know, slide type moves. But every time that happens, it happens in an environment like we're sitting in, where there has been distribution dominating the tape. We're trading below technical areas of support, and there's very little leadership. So we have, you know, it's sort of like if I give you a couple of ingredients as your bartender, you know, and start throwing them in a shaker and they all don't sound very good, putting the three together and shaking them up isn't going to make it taste any better, right?
Yeah.
And that's precisely the cocktail we kind of have right now. So you just have to be a little bit more tactical, in my view, and understand the risks. I can get into, too, I think there's sort of a larger theme going on, in my view, of the market has been reinforcing certain risk management strategies that I think are being challenged and have been challenged over the last 12 to 18 months. And I don't know that that is over. We can get into that a little bit more if you want.
Yeah. Talk also to me. What do you mean? What behaviors, I'm assuming, is this buy the dip? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, or there's a really 60, good
60-40 buy.
You know, like, well, you just nailed two of them. So let's start with buy the dip, or the idea that the market will just kind of bail me out. Anybody who has been around long enough knows that bull markets and strong trends reward dip buyers until they don't. The old, you know, the trend is your friend until the large dip at the end. And this is precisely, I think, equities over the last decade have, everybody has, you know, slowly adopted this idea of maybe it's the Fed that will bail me out, or you know, this continued TINA, there is no alternative type of thing. And, you know, I'll get into a little bit why that may be changing, but let's just look in the past year. How many people decided, well, just buy the dip in all the tech leaders that I mentioned prior? Well, they've had their heads handed to them. Mm-hmm. How about long short equity guys who decided, well, we don't need to use stops when we short something like GameStop or AMC? Well, they've been carried out. The 60-40 guys you mentioned, I just wrote about this in a piece for the Epoch Times called Risk Non-Parity, saying that when you decide to manage risk by laying it off onto something else rather than trimming. So if I'm holding risk in my left hand and I decide instead of just dealing with the left hand, I'll find something I can hold on to in my right hand. And these are supposed to go like this. And then they both go like that. You're going to have a big problem. Well, and I heard it. I've heard it my whole career. Well, I don't need to raise cash and equities because I have these bonds over here that are carrying them. We just had the worst quarter in the history of that strategy. You know, that strategy is designed to eat like a bird in terms of its returns. Well, now it's taken a dump like an elephant, and everybody is asking themselves, is this the worst? Is it past? I'm not so sure. Look at strategies like and funds like Archegos, same kind of thing.
Yeah.
These blowups that we're seeing. And how many people have been conditioned then in the larger sense to say, well, the Fed has my back. The last couple of times the Fed's been talking, Maggie, they're not saying that anymore. Doesn't mean they won't eventually. But
on the contrary, they seem to be indicating the exact opposite.
Exactly right. And this is but maybe that's why the equities have traded a little better than I would have thought. I'm not sure, which is why I'm always going to default to both the technicals and fundamentals. But as I see it, the Fed is saying heads, we're going to raise rates. Tails, we're going to raise rates even more. So either scenario, we're going to withdraw liquidity or withdraw it even faster. Now, that is not, generally speaking, the most bullish fundamental driver either. So those are kind of the two major things we're grappling with. And the way that's going to manifest itself is, I think, precisely what I described earlier. People realizing, well, I thought this was a good risk management strategy, but maybe it wasn't. And could bonds and equities both continue to fall? Absolutely. Whoever said they both have to go up at the same time?
Yeah.
I think that's what
made people so nervous, especially on Friday. And again, not to overemphasize the action on Friday. We have been seeing this on days, but it was sort of ratcheting up into the close and everything was getting taken down at the same time. And you did have that sort of feeling where, wait, this isn't supposed to happen. I want to introduce the idea of sort of where to look in this environment. We have some great questions, but Michael Nicoletta spoke to Dan Rasmussen of Verdad Advisors, and he was talking about trying to sort of navigate this tricky period and, you know, the attractiveness for him of gold. Let's have a listen to that clip.
Gold is a really interesting trade. I mean, I think I love gold and sort of, you know, I used to think people that bought gold were crazy. Okay. You know, that they're, you know, the gold bugs, right? You know, why would you own gold? You know, it's this metal, you know, that Warren Buffett thing. It's just a big thing, a big block of metal. And, you know, why would you own it? Until I started doing a lot of macroeconomic analysis. And then you see why people like gold. And the reason people like gold is that the back half of the economic cycle, which is stagflation going into recession, right? And what happens, again, you know, stagflation can tip into recession really fast or tip into slowdown really fast. And so what you're looking for in the back half of the economic cycle is something that's going to do well both in stagflation and in recession, right? And so you look at something like treasuries where you say, hey, you could take some pain in the inflation part of the stagflation before you get that flip over into recession. So you kind of own them knowing you'll take some short-term pain because you'll take small losses and avoid big losses in your portfolio. So it's a good thing to own treasuries because, you know, you're getting ready for the next play. Whereas gold can work in both, right? Gold works because people are worried about inflation, so they buy gold. And then when slowdown happens, people panic about everything and they buy gold because they're scared. And so you get, you know, this beautiful performance of gold across the back half of the cycle that makes it, I think, a really interesting diversifying asset to a lot of your other exposures. So I think, you know, as a sort of commodity play, if you're bullish on commodities, now gold doesn't have the same upside volatility as oil. But I think it's a much safer portfolio play because of the way it works across both of those two economic environments.
And that full interview is available to Essential Plus and Pro members on our website. Mark, what do you think about that? Are you looking at gold?
Well, I would argue today's price action on gold was not very good because if you look, we sort of had this breakout above, you know, the 1850, you know, area. And I highlighted this as well a few months ago when it started to move. But this pullback, in my view, is getting a little bit excessive. So I would defer to the technicals. And personally, I am not a gold bug. I've made this point before. I trade gold when it sets up, and it's almost always a trade. And there are some fundamental things in gold I still don't fully understand. I've heard the gold bug argument my whole career. And likewise, you know, the other people that say, well, gold doesn't yield anything and doesn't really do much and, you know, doesn't have any industrial uses. I think both arguments are probably equally valid at equal times. So I'm saying when you look at the larger chart, and actually I talked about this with Jim Ropel when I interviewed him last and we sort of caught up, and he was saying, hey, this is one of the most elegant chart patterns. Well, it doesn't look as elegant right now because I think it's pulled in a little much. And I would just say that's probably has to do with the strength in the dollar. You know, macro isn't my forte, but I understand the drivers. And if the dollar continues to stay bid, you could make the inverse argument, of course, though. Look how well gold has held up with how strong the dollar is. Well, yeah. That, fair enough. But if gold is really going to take off and make new highs, I think, you know, you want to see it trade a little bit better or the dollar potentially come off. So I have a small position that I've held since that breakout. I traded out of a little bit of it, but I want to see it firm up here. I wouldn't want to see it trade much lower. If it does, though, it would just tell me it's going to need to put in more time before it probably makes a higher move. And I would rather, as I've said before, even trade out of something, wait for the technicals to improve and buy back in, even if it's at higher prices, if I think the wind, you know, is a little more strongly at my back.
Yeah. And there have been people pointing out, and we do have a lot of people on who've been looking at gold who, you know, continue to believe that that is a fantastic diversification play in this environment. But there are other people who say, I mean, if gold's not going to do it now, when is it going to do it? I mean, the theoretically, all the circumstances are in place that this should be gold's moment. And
it, sure, all the
it's been disappointing on a technical level, hasn't it?
Yes, I think so. However, you know, There's no shortage of gold guys out there who give you reasons maybe why it's still going to have its moment. And they could be right, which is, again, why I just tend, you know, wait for the technicals to shape up and then, you know, go with the trend.
Are you in any other metals? Because we you know, gold, yes, it was down, but we saw a huge move in palladium down 10%. You know, we know what happened to nickel a while back. Are you in any of those other areas? And is palladium something that was on your radar at all?
Other precious metals aren't really on my radar. I am watching uranium, of course. I've talked about that in the past. That's very niche. I still think it's something people should be watching, but not any of the other precious metals currently.
Yeah. I interviewed the CEO of UEC the other day. We had a fascinating conversation about uranium. So if anyone's interested, you go check it out. And Jared has been having a dueling match with what he calls the uranium a-holes to his new friends. So there's been a lot of hot conversation around uranium. That's for sure.
Yes. I commented on that as well.
You did.
Yeah. Jared and I we disagreed a little bit when we were together in California on that issue.
Yeah. At the Real Vision macro experience, we had a lot of conversations about energy, as you can imagine.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
What about, I just want to stay with John's question because we answered gold, we answered metals. What about oil? This has really moved back. A lot of the discussion seems to be centered around China and, you know, worries about demand there being lower on the lockdowns from a fundamental point of view. But what are you watching that technically? What are you seeing there?
I am. And if you remember last time in January, I thought oil was going higher. And now I think it's very interesting. So let's talk about both, at least from how I'm looking at it. I got knocked out of, you know, one of the oil equities today, and the equities actually traded worse than the commodity, which isn't that surprising because as I said last time we talked, and this hadn't changed, that oil and oil related names, gas, drillers, services, all those are the top groups in equities in terms of relative strength. Now, today they took a pretty good hit. Well, that's normal. You know, when stocks are trending, you know, really strongly, then you get a large headline like this, or the underlying commodity takes a hit for all those names to pull back. And in a lot of ways, I think even some of your growth managers were had rotated and trying to hide in oil because their other groups aren't working. So where do you go? You go with the strength. And that, and when there's very little strength, that's why you can have action like you did today. So technically, I don't think oil has broken yet. And this is, if you look at the chart, we definitely had what looks like a potential exhaustion or blow off top. But the jury's still out, in my view, for a couple of reasons. The first is, look at all the consolidations we've had over the last, say, 6 to 9 months. They've lasted 8 to 12 weeks, and then you were in new highs. Right now, we're only at, say, seven, eight weeks, and we're only off about, you know, a little over 20%. That's pretty normal for a bull advance. So it's the jury is out right here in terms of, you know, where does it go? And actually, if you looked at the end of the day, commodity kind of closed mid-range, oil found a little bit of footing here. So I think it's tough to say either way. Then fundamentally, I think there's a pretty bullish case to be made for oil still. Those who know, you know, my style would know I'm not going to trade on fundamentals alone, but what has changed in the supply demand dynamics? Now, if you believe, the China headlines are real and that now we have a severe, potential slowing in incremental demand due to, you know, economic slowdown from the shutdowns in China, then maybe we have it. But prior to this, I haven't seen anything that tells me that the supply-demand situation has changed. In fact, prior to today, what have we had? We've had just governments saying, don't worry, guys, we're going to pay for these expensive oil charges, whether it's the state of California, certain European nations saying we'll send out stimulus checks. All that does is keep buyers buying. Yeah. And you have the United States saying, well, we're not going to produce more. We're just going to release the SPR. Well, coming into seasonal strong period for oil, both due to, you know, summer driving season and the cyclically strongest part of the year, where we're already at a sort of a shortfall in terms of production, I don't see how that changes that dynamic. So the jury's out. In my view, I could see it going either way. I will also just add, I think if we make new highs, I think that this break has certainly brought some of the shorts back in, and there is enough people on the other side of the trade now that I think a break higher is potentially even, you know, more powerful in the short run.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it? I mean, you sort of touched on this when you were talking about direct payments, but isn't it possible that, like the long end of the bond market, it's just anticipating that? The cure for high prices is high prices, and that there will be a drop off in demand, recessions on the way, and it's a matter of timing. And so if you've put that high in, the best is behind us in terms of growth. But like that would presumably, if it's going to go lower, that's the fundamental story that you'd be betting on.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really important point, that was sort of my point prior to, say, this China news, or the idea that, like, what is going to change the demand side? And normally, to your point, it would be prices that make people just say, well, okay, I'm going to crimp my buying. I'm going to walk. I'm going to, you know, go from two cars to one, or carpool, any manner of those things. So when the government is standing on the other side saying no one needs to change their behavior, then we need higher prices in order to do that. Yeah. It's sort of economics 101. We've done nothing to treat the actual problem, you know, in my view. Again, I'm not an oil expert. I'm watching this closely. If you look, though, the last scare we had like this was when Omicron sort of started perking its head up back in November. Oil took a pretty decent hit, but stayed in a base and then broke out and rallied hard. So if that were to play out again, I think we're looking at you know, even higher prices, as hard to imagine as that may be. If we get a weekly close below, say, 95 or 90, then I think the bears are probably in control.
Mm. So I want to ask this question from Mushir on from the exchange. And it's a tough one, but I think it speaks to the concern people have. He's saying, can you ask Mark, he or she, what would you advise regular Joe in the street? How should he or how can he save himself in this current environment? I think it's the same way of saying, like, where can you find safety? Is it cash? Is that the only thing that looks safe to you right now, Mark?
Well, listen, the good news is bear markets are the authors of bull markets. The problem is most people get their head handed to them in the bear markets. So for guys like me, it's yes, cash is a position, but it's not a position I just sit in all the time, where I'm trying to wait for the balance of evidence to be in my favor. But this is where, yeah, I think knowing how and when to use cash, not just, you know, this idea of you just generically always have 25% or a certain percent allocated to cash. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I would say, you know, to the average investor, and this is one of the things, you know, I teach people, you know, if they want to follow me on Twitter or that kind of thing, is when to know and learn when are those classic signs to say, okay, you need to be raising a little bit of cash or a lot of cash, depending. And some of this is your style and your experience level, where I've been saying for 9 months, you know, that, listen, we're seeing deterioration under the hood. Risk levels are rising despite what the index is potentially showing you. And most people, you know, don't understand how to watch and monitor this stuff. But if you think about it in terms of even, let's say the market bottoms next month, and we really have another nice run, whatever's leading is going to be different this time around. Mm. So I can promise you, everybody who's trying to pick lows in stocks, like in ETFs like ARK or some of those components,
yeah,
are not going to have their eyes on what the real leaders of the next cycle will be.
Well, so that brings me to a perfect question that we can end on, which is, what indicators are you looking at to mark a market bottom? And when do you know when to start spending that cash and where? Like, what should people be looking at?
Well, and this is where this is where flexibility is so important. And everybody loves to praise guys like Stan Druckenmiller, myself included. I think he's one of the all-time greats. But what he often talks about is his ability to stay flexible. People love to ignore that and just say, we think, you know, Druckenmiller is always right. What he's talking about is flexibility. It's the idea of saying, I'm not always right, so I have to be flexible enough to sort of bend with the market. And this is where you want to test. To my point earlier, we've had multiple failed rally attempts. So if you get a rally attempt, you put a little bit of capital to work, a little, and then you build on success or failure. You know, I often ask people, if you're 25% invested and it's going poorly, should you double up? I would say no. If I'm 25% invested and it's working well, then you add incrementally as things are going in your favor. So I like to see accumulation come in. Then I want to see, where is their strength, and dip a few toes. Mm-hmm. If it's working, then I go in waist deep. And that's how you can level your exposure up into a situation that is potentially really powerful. This is, anybody wants to go back and look at my videos from shortly after the COVID lows, I was very skeptical. Then I dipped a toe. And then within a month, I was saying to Ed Harrison at the time, I'm very bullish. Yeah. Well, I didn't just get there overnight. It's a process, which is why you should be regularly looking to see, where is their strength. Right now, I'm not seeing a whole lot to be excited about, but in a month or a week, I may change my view. It's constantly an evolving process, just like even some of your best macro fundamental guys. Well, when they see different headlines or things or different news prints and fundamental headlines, they start to change and alter their view as well.
Absolutely. And or continue to test the one you have to make sure it's still relevant. I think the one last thing we have to end on, I'm going to sneak one more in, Mark, is do volumes matter? So, you know, you're going to be looking at the chart, you're going to be looking at price action, you're going to be layering in, you know, beginning slow and adding if you feel like it's going in the right direction. What about volume, though? Like, do you need to see confirmation of high volume, and do seasonal factors come to play here? Like, if we're going to experiment, is going into summer the time to do it? I mean, could that make things riskier?
Great question. The answer is yes. Volume is extremely important. So to my point about these sort of accumulation or rally attempts, those are predicated on the market having closing higher and above average volume several days after the low, meaning you're getting subsequent buying after a market has bounced. And every meaningful rally in the history of the stock market has had valid accumulation days coming 4 days or after the subsequent low. So if you want to have a meaningful rally in equities, you have to have one of those. Now, per what I was saying earlier, it doesn't mean everyone works, but when they do, they can produce powerful results. Last, I think it was Friday, it was Thursday or Friday, we had an 11-to-1 down day on NASDAQ, meaning down volume issues swamped buying by 11 times. We haven't had that bad of volume action since last November. That is precisely the opposite of what we want to see.
Yeah.
So to your point about one thing that will immediately get me buying something somewhere is if we see a reverse of that dynamic. Mm-hmm. So if we see a 10-to-1 accumulation day on the NYSE or NASDAQ, I will absolutely be testing the waters and buying positions, probably a few positions. And it's what some of my mentors would call a mental health buy. Doesn't matter how bad you feel, you've got to step in and start playing a little bit, because that's exactly what's going to get your view changing faster than anything else. So and to your last point about seasonality, yes, I think we're moving into potentially a time of the year when volumes are a little bit lower. Doesn't mean I wouldn't play. It also means if this sort of grinding bear market continues, we may continue to see volatility. If we go full on risk off, we may see things move sharply lower, because if there were no bids before and we're in seasonally lower volume periods, there may be even less.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't stop me if we saw constructive volume.
Fantastic and great stuff for us all to watch out for. Mark, always fun to catch up with you. Thank you for all the great insight. And thanks to all of you for the fantastic questions as usual. I'll be back here same time tomorrow with Stephen Van Meter. We'll see you then. In the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.